If you'll remain standing and turn and greet one another. And now let us join in singing hymn number 326, Let All the Beauty We Have Known. Please be seated. We are so glad you are here for worship. If today is your first day with us, we're especially happy to have you here. If you weren't able to check in at the guest table on your way in, please do so on your way out so that we can keep in touch. There are many events coming up in the life of the church, so make sure you take a look at your bulletin and check out the sign-up table in the narthex. You can see the posted material that is in the fellowship hall. And make sure you stick around after church for coffee, cookies, and community. We are so glad that each and every one of you is here today. Today, it is my pleasure to welcome to the pulpit the Reverend Eric Carlson. For the last 6 years, Eric has served as the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church in Stockton, Illinois, which is where Matthew is preaching today. For the last 5 of those years, his incredibly talented wife, Kimberly, has served as our program director right here at the church in Rockford. In case you haven't seen the newsletter this week, Eric is going to be serving in Kenosha, Wisconsin as their new minister, and unfortunately, he's taking Kimberly and their son Miles with him. So they're going to be moving this summer, but even though we're going to miss them terribly, it's not too far, so we will count on them visiting us. That's right, vice versa. So there's an open invitation for us to come to Kenosha. Eric has served on the boards of the Unitarian Universalist Association and the Central Midwest District. While our senior minister Matthew is preaching there, we are thrilled to have Eric with us this morning. The flaming chalice is the symbol of our faith, a beacon of truth, a fire for justice, a warmth for the soul. Jake Chidley is going to light the chalice this morning. Jake is 7 years old. He loves Pokemon, he loves Legos, and yesterday he spent the day helping his mom clean up all the weeds that should have and dead stuff that should have been taken care of in the fall. So Jake is also a very hard worker. While the chalice has been lit, let us speak together the covenant of our church. Love is the spirit of this church, and reason is its guide, to dwell together in peace, to seek truth in freedom, and to serve human need. This is our covenant. And now may we sing together our chalice response song.
Good morning again. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church, Rockford, Illinois, where we have proudly stood as a beacon of religious freedom for nearly 175 years. Yeah, right? It's fantastic. We come together this morning as a people of faith, united by our Unitarian teachings, which remind us that the love of the universe is one and unifying, and our universalism, which instructs us that we are each deserving of and beholden to this love. Welcome to our service. Welcome to our celebration.
Good morning. The story I have for you today is called I Wonder by Annika Harris. Eva loves to look for the moon. It follows her from place to place, disappearing behind trees and mountains, and then appearing again someplace new. Look, Mama, there it is. The moon looks so beautiful in the sky. How do you think, Eva, it follows us? Eva thinks about it, but she can't figure it out. It's okay to say, I don't know, says her mother. When we don't know something, we get to wonder about it. I wonder if the Earth and the Moon are friends, says Eva. Her mother smiles. I like that idea. But Mama, how does the Moon really stay close to us? Well, there is an invisible force called gravity, and it pulls things in the universe together, Eva's mother explains. Gravity keeps the moon close to the Earth, and it keeps the planets close to the moon, close to the sun, too. And they circle around like this. Eva understands a little better, but then she starts to wonder, Mama, where does gravity come from? Well, I don't know, Eva. Nobody really knows for sure, and no one knows the answer to something. It's called a mystery. A mystery is something for everyone to wonder about together. How fun! Eva imagines herself wondering about gravity together with all of the people in the world. Eva watches the moon disappear behind some clouds, and as she walks, she's excited to see where will it appear next. Mama, how many grains of sand are in the whole world? Oh, I wonder that too. There are trillions and trillions of grains of sand, but nobody knows exactly how many. Eva tries to think about all the sand in the whole world. It feels so big, I can't quite fit it into my imagination. It kind of makes me feel dizzy, like I'm falling. I know what you mean, said her mother, and I'm sure that other people feel that way too. Eva walks down another path, looking for the moon, and a little orange butterfly appears. And then she notices that there are butterflies everywhere. Mama, where did all these butterflies come from? Well, those butterflies have been flying around for days. They started out as little caterpillars, and those caterpillars came from eggs, and those eggs came from other butterflies. There are cycles that are all around us, with one thing ending and another beginning. Things are always changing. Can you think of other things that change? Clouds, says Eva, frogs, and me. Later, Eva wonders, Mama, what was here before butterflies and frogs and clouds, before everything? I don't know, answers her mother. It's another mystery. I like trying to imagine what was here before the beginning of everything. What do you think was here? Eva says, smiling, I don't know. And then she thinks for a long time, and then she has an idea. I wonder if there were feelings. And as she walks home, Eva sees the moon once again, glowing brightly above the roof of her house. Let's go inside and look for the moon through the window, she says. We live with some big mysteries. When we come upon them, we're given a little gift. Every mystery is something for all of us to wonder about together. What do you wonder about? The end. Please join me in singing the children downstairs. It's This Little Light of Mine, hymn 118.
Several announcements that we really need to highlight today. So first, I am going to ask Teresa to come up and talk to you a little bit about the Passover Seder that we have coming up.
This is just a fast announcement. Our Passover Seder is April 29th, which is a week from this coming Friday, but I'm driving to Schaumburg this afternoon to buy the ritual kosher foods. Sign up after church in the narthex if you are even thinking about going, or there won't be any food for you.
We are going to be putting together a new church directory, so if you have not yet done so, please make sure that you sign up to get your portraits taken. We have a lot of new faces in our church family. I'm new, my family is new since, and I know there have been a lot of incredible people who have joined the church since then, so please make sure that you sign up in the narthex. You guys don't care where it is after second service because you're first, sorry. There is an Introduction to UU class that is going to take place next Sunday after the second service. A light lunch will be served. So if you are new to Unitarian Universalism and you'd like to get to know a little bit more about it, you may also join us for that class. And I am going to invite Dave Lance up right now to talk to you about trash or treasure.
Given the honor of this announcement about 2 minutes before the service, so it's not horribly organized here. The most important thing to remember is until about 12:20 or so, this is a church and a church service. And if you have to leave at the end of the service and can't get back easily, yes, you can unload outside on the wall, not in front of where we walk in, but on the wall, on the sidewalk. That's possible. Otherwise than that, we're not going to take anything except the sanctuary right after the second service, and we'll give the second service people, if they want, a little time for coffee. Obviously, if you can stay in the afternoon, you'll see right away that we need all kinds of help. And if you can work during the week, that's wonderful. If not, you can also come back on Saturday after the sale at 1, and by all means, help put this back to what it looks like right now. I think that about covers it. I'll tell second service people you may have been off the hook about what they get to do with the chairs.
I don't know if I should mention, I'm reading from a script that Matthew sent out on April 11th that included your name in here, Dave. Sorry. Oops. I want to make sure I'm not missing something. There are other signups that are out in the narthex, as I mentioned earlier. So now we will take up our offering. It is to support the work of justice and mercy in the world. 80% of what's collected today will go to the Unitarian Universalist Association, whose primary purpose is to serve the needs of its member congregations, organize new congregations, extend and strengthen Unitarian Universalist institutions, and implement its principles. The offering will now be given and received. I am an AP English teacher at Auburn High School, and not too long ago, I taught my students a practice AP prompt, similar to what they'll see on the AP exam, that involved green living. And the question that they were to discuss and answer in practice for what they would write is, to what extent should the government foster us turning to green living? And it's always interesting to me to hear the students' responses, whether we're talking about the Germans who went against the Nazis and helped the Jews during the Holocaust, or whether we're talking about people who are choosing whether they're going to recycle or do whatever they want in their own home lives. Students typically are divided into two different sets of beliefs. And what seems to me is, it's a valid argument. Do I put myself first so that I'm able to take care of everything else? Or do I put others first, thinking that that will also help my life to improve? I think I know where most of us sitting here today lie, because we are definitely centered on social justice and putting others first, because we tend to believe that, or I mean, don't let me speak for everyone, but it is our tendency to believe in our liberal religious habits that if we take care of others, we take care of ourselves at the same time. So it was difficult for me to find something today to talk about to really say. I think Eric is going to be providing you the great inspiration, so I thought perhaps instead I would provide just a little bit of entertainment. So I turned to The Onion, and I found an article entitled, "Proud Species Commit Suicide Rather Than Be Driven to Extinction by Humans." And if you are familiar with The Onion, you know that there will be language in here that I have to bleep out. Coos Bay, Oregon. Amidst rapidly deteriorating environmental conditions that have left the species in imminent danger of extinction, the world's leatherback sea turtles announced plans Tuesday to commit mass suicide rather than allow human beings to wipe them out. For years, we've just been sitting around waiting for these bleeps to finish us off. But I say if we're going to go out, we do it on our own terms, said a 25-year-old female leatherback, who, along with others of her species, confirmed she would rather throw herself into the rudder of a fishing boat than give those bleeps the satisfaction of finishing the job. Any of us who managed to survive this massacre would at best end up displayed in an aquarium or penned up in some bleep ocean preserve. And what kind of life is that? No thanks. We're leaving this world with our dignity intact. Several leatherback turtles added that while suicide was indeed their most respectable option, they would regret not being around later in the century to see the human race itself driven to extinction. Now we are going to sing hymn number 61, "Lo, the Earth Awakens Again."
Thank you.
Our readings this morning are from two great 19th century Unitarian thinkers, naturalists, and theologians. Because these are readings from the 19th century, they do contain gender-specific language, and I apologize. But rather than edit Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, I decide I will read them as written. The first are excerpts from Emerson's essays on nature. A subtle chain of countless rings, the next unto the furthest brings. The eye reads omens where it goes and speaks all languages, the rose. And striving to be man, the worm mounts through all the spires of form. He continues, to go into solitude, a man needs to retire as much from his chamber as from society. I am not solitary whilst I read and write, though nobody is with me. But if a man would be alone, let him look at the stars. The rays that come from those heavenly worlds will separate between him and what he touches. One might think the atmosphere was made transparent with this design, to give man in the heavenly bodies the perpetual presence of the sublime. Seen in the streets of cities, how great they are. If the stars should appear one night in 1,000 years, how would men behave? Would they believe and adore and preserve for many generations the remembrance of the city of God which has been shown? But every night come out these envoys of beauty and light the universe with their admonishing smile. Second reading is from Henry David Thoreau. For my part, I feel that with regard to nature, I live a sort of border life, on the confines of a world into which I make occasional and transient forays only, and my patriotism and allegiance to the state into whose territories I seem to retreat are those of a moss trooper. Unto a life which I call natural, I would gladly follow, even a will-o'-the-wisp through bogs and sloughs unimaginable, but no moon nor firefly has shown me the causeway to it. Nature is a personality so vast and universal that we have never seen even one of her true features. So I will be sharing our anthem in just a little bit, a piece of mine entitled Given the Alternative. But for now, I would invite you to again be present, whole and attentive to yourself, your body, your breath, and your spirit. Please join with me in just a brief moment of quiet, centering meditation. So, I wonder, like that mother and child in the story, I wonder why we're here. I wonder how we came to be here, what it all means. I wonder about the vast possibilities and probabilities that we even exist. Sentient, self-aware beings in this vast planet, in this vast solar system itself, a mere speck within a spiral in a seemingly infinite universe. The mind boggles at the understanding that we carry in the very chemical makeup of our bodies, the components of dying stars. or the seemingly impossible odds each of our ancestral lines must have beat in order to carry the chain of life unbroken from its inception forward to the life forms we are today. Or even the simple knowledge that our experience here is finite. Yes, indeed, I wonder. But perhaps even more challenging a task than trying to conceive of the scope and breadth of the universe and our infinitesimal part within its whole is to imagine the very real alternative that instead of all of these somethings, instead of all of these somethings, there is nothing. It is just as logical and perhaps far more likely in the cosmological sense that instead of creation, there is simply nothing at all. Consider for a moment the fact that life, the world, your consciousness, the universe, in fact, everything that ever was or ever shall be, is not necessary. There's no guarantee of existence. There's no written or unwritten law that there is to be anything at all. The alternative to something, of course, then is nothing. Now, it's nearly impossible to conceive of nothingness. All of our perspective, the knowledge we gain from our surroundings via our senses, our intellect, and our instinct, is based on the presupposition that those things with which we come in contact, and even ourselves, are real. We exist, so the things that act upon us must exist as well. The concept of true nothingness, no air, no light, no mass, no size, is so foreign to the way most of us think of reality as to be nearly incomprehensible. It might take years or even decades of intense discipline to cultivate the art of nothingness that is the goal of meditation, many different types of meditation. And even then, the nothingness there can be shattered in an instant by some outside stimulus. But given this very real and very powerful alternative, that instead of something, there could just as easily and just as logically be nothing, we are called to evaluate the actual situation in which we find ourselves. And I would argue that given the alternative, the fact that anything exists at all is inherently good. Given the alternative, the fact that anything exists at all is inherently good. A single rock floating in space is arguably better than the alternative of there being no rock or no space at all. The fact that stars, meteors, planets, and Earth's oceans, sequoias, and wildebeests are is vastly preferable to the ultimate alternative of nothing existing. As we're discussing creation this month, and I know Earth Day is coming up, I've been thinking a lot about the importance of myth, in particular those around creation. And we're probably familiar with some of them from the world's religious traditions, the Hebrew creation myths. Yes, there are two. They both appear in Genesis, the one where man and woman are created out of clay dust, brought to life by the sacred breath of God. And then the second myth that immediately follows about Adam and his rib and Eve and the snake and the garden and so on. But there are many myths, of course, and there's one I encountered during my years in seminary, which impressed me as an appropriate perspective from which to look at this central issue of existence. The myth originates with a theologian ecologist named Hans Jonas. Jonas first acknowledges that there is no necessity of there being a world at all. and that this understanding leads to an ethic of responsibility to maintain the world that is given. In his own creation myth, Jonas proposes the existence of a benevolent deity investing itself entirely in the creation. The god in this myth is not granted the power of omniscience and does not know the results of its investment. The god's own continued existence is contingent upon the survival of its creation. Therefore, we human beings, who have the agency to destroy or preserve life on earth, have also the agency to preserve or destroy the Creator herself. And this parallels a much older story from Western polytheism in which the prime mover was a deity whose sense of love for herself exploded into the creation that we are now a part of. These myths are telling us something. These stories, like all myths, point to larger truths, whatever form the creation actually took. They're metaphors that try and communicate larger truths within the context of narrative. And ultimately, they tell us of a gift. We are the beneficiaries of a rich and prosperous existence, and it really doesn't matter of whom it was given. The reality that this is a gift remains. Each of our lives is at once unique and illogical, beautiful and logically unnecessary. Our fragile environment is filled with creatively diverse and improbable life forms, so improbable it seems that slight variance of environmental conditions can wreak havoc on life's delicate balance. I'd like to now pause and share our anthem. This is a piece I wrote about Jonas and his work in ecology and theology, and it is appropriately entitled, Given the Alternative. Alternative that life exists at all. Inherent good is clear beyond the supernatural call. But with power comes our privilege, responsible for all, that we may make or break the future of the natural. And yes, I'm speaking to you. That God perhaps did lose herself in act of creation. That altruistic, mystic creature lives in everyone, contingent on continuing life below us and above. To this maternal creature's life, we must dedicate our love. And yes, I'm speaking with you. Given the alternative, we do not have to be. Given the alternative, we have no right to see. Given the alternative, responsibility is ours to make sure life goes on through all eternity. And yes, I am asking of you. Theos is as logos does, the word becomes the way. Existential disregard, the wars of yesterday. Consumption fuels machines to run and lets the rich go play. We have no choice but to resist, or we'll have a price to pay. Yes, I am pleading with you. But and now the time has come to help us end the war between ourselves and our earthly home for nations near and far. Future generations are a part of history, so keep them all close in mind as we find morality. And yes, I'm asking of you. Given the alternative, we do not have to be. Given the alternative, we have no right to see. Given the alternative, responsibility is ours to make sure life goes on through all eternity. And yes, I am praying for you. Given the alternative that life exists at all, inherent good is clear beyond the supernatural call, but with power comes our privilege, responsible for all, that we may make or break the future of the natural. And yes, I am praying with you. And yes, I am praying